Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in a Park show. Today it is going to be a special show because I have up in the studio right now two members of the Chicago group The Magnetics. So today they will be talking about their story and will be playing their records. So it should be an interesting show. So first of all, if you guys could introduce yourselves.
Well, my name is John McKinney. That's my real name, John L. McKinney.
Okay.
I recorded under Johnny Lee Mack.
Okay.
And I'm Andrew Griffin, and that's what I recorded under.
Okay. So we actually have sort of two stories to tell today, because Johnny McKinney had his own story, and the Magnetics had their own story, and they sort of intersected, and it became one group. So I guess first of all, if we could talk to John about how you got started in music and where you're from originally.
I'm originally from Albion, Michigan.
Okay.
And I got started in 50-something by buying a guitar from a friend that wasn't allowed to play it in his apartment.
Okay. So, were you in grade high school at that time?
No, I was out of high school. Then.
Okay.
I was out of high school, and I bought it, and I started learning to play it a little bit, and then I started writing songs.
Okay.
And the first song I wrote, I was working for a place called Union Steel Company in Albion, Michigan.
Okay.
And I wrote a song called Angels in the Sky.
And that ended up actually being released on a record, right?
It was released on a Mad label by Tommy Madman Jones.
So it was released on a Chicago record label, Mad Records,
right?
Around 1958, something
around
like that.
In the 50s, yeah, 50s, something like that.
So how did you end up, you were in Albion, Michigan, how far is that from Chicago?
About 180 miles.
How did you end up getting a record on a Chicago label?
I was down here visiting some relatives here.
Okay.
And while I was here, I decided to take a dub downtown and just hit some of the record companies and see what I could do with it.
So you had already recorded the record in a studio and produced it, and you were just shopping it around to record labels?
Well, actually, at that time I was, yes.
Okay.
And then I met George Freeman.
Okay.
You've heard of George Freeman,
yeah.
That's right. And Vaughn Freeman and Tommy Jones.
Okay.
And they decided to ask him if they could help me on getting a record out.
Do you remember where you met them?
On Wabash Avenue, I think it was, downtown.
Okay, you met them like at Record Row pretty much?
Yeah, pretty much on Record Row. So I was kind of making my rounds then, and okay. They saw me carrying my guitar, and I think it was Vaughn Freeman, so I mean, asked me some questions about it. And I told him what I was doing, and he decided to get me in touch with his brother, which is George.
Okay.
And we did things. We was working with, at that time, Ralph Bass, and doing a dub for King Records.
Okay.
At that time.
So they ended up putting out a record on you on Mad Records.
Yes.
And it's called Angels in the Sky.
It's called Angels in the Sky, and G, How I Love You. Mm.
Okay, and did it get any play on the radio?
Naturally, in my hometown.
Okay. How big is Albion, Michigan?
Albion, Michigan, probably right now is about, I guess, close to 20,000 people, I guess.
Okay.
Little town.
And are there any other artists from Albion, Michigan?
Not that I know of.
And were you trying to do music full-time? Is that like what your goal was at that time?
No, it wasn't my goal. I was working in a factory, Union Steel, a company called Union Steel Products Company.
Okay, but you wanted to be successful with music.
But I wanted to go further. I wanted to get out of the factories. That's what I wanted to do.
Okay, so that record that you cut, Angels in the Sky, got play in your hometown.
It got recognition in radio station WALM.
Okay.
And the disc jockey that was pushing it was called Jim Beasley.
Okay. So you must have been excited that you had record out.
Definitely.
Do you remember how old you were when that record came out?
I was about 19, 20.
Okay. And then soon after that, you ended up recording for Clock Records. Is that correct?
I went to New York.
Okay.
And did a thing with Walter Moody on Clock Records.
Okay. And the record you cut for Clock Records was called if you leave me, that's the side I have at least.
Yeah.
And so how did you end up, why did you go to New York? You were just looking for a record deal there?
Well, I had a lady named Wilta B. Dean who wrote Te Amo for Frankie Lane back years ago. She wanted to manage me.
Okay.
And I got some connections through her.
Okay.
And that's why she was sending me different places to...
So you were traveling around looking for...
Around.
Did you go anywhere else besides New York looking for a deal?
Basically, I worked out in New York, Atlanta, Georgia, and Chicago, and Wisconsin. Those are the main areas.
Okay, and you ended up getting on Clock Records, and that's the record label that, I guess, is most famous for Dave Baby Fortiles.
Right.
He had the Happy Organ on
Happy
that
Organ,
label.
Right.
And so you cut this record, and it got released around 1960, something like that.
Yeah,
let me play the record, and we can talk a little bit more.
Okay.
This is Johnny McKinney with his second record, and this is called If You Leave Me. Okay, that was just Johnny McKinney with his second record called If You Leave Me, and it was, I think, released sometime around 1960 for Clock Records in New York. And there's a vocal group back in it, but the group is not the Magnetics, right?
No, it's not the Magnetics.
But you said it's actually, it wasn't just some guys, it was some group from New York.
It was a group out of New York there that... the arranger arranged them to put background.
But you don't remember what specific room?
I don't know.
Okay. And did that get any... That was a nice record, especially that had a nice early kind of soul sound.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what if it got any play on the radio?
Well, Albion on the WLA station.
Actually, you're the hometown hero.
And I had the picture in the paper front page and all that stuff. So it went from up to number 12 or number... Almost number one there.
On the Albion radio station.
Yeah, that section of town, yeah.
Okay. So while all of this was happening, the Magnetics were formed and singing together. So I guess we'll be talking to Andrew for a little bit about the story of the Magnetics. So first of all, what part of Chicago are you from?
Chicago, North Side.
Okay.
Cabrini Green.
So, and so the Magnetics, are they all from the, besides Johnny, from Cabrini Green?
Yes.
And listeners probably know Cabrini Green is famous for many Chicago soul artists.
Right. We have Jerry Butler, Ramsey Lewis, Curtis Mayfield,
Major Lance.
Believe it or not, a long time ago, he's not originally from Cabrini Green, but he was there. Isaac Hayes.
Okay.
He was there at one time. We used to call him Big Nose Ike, but he used to run track barefoot. But at that time, he wasn't singing until he went to California, I believe it was.
Okay. So how did you get involved with singing, and when did the Magnetics form?
In the project we had on Friday nights, we had a circle, and the management would have us do dances there in the circle behind the administration building.
Okay.
And a lot of the little groups that we had there singing, they would be a show. It would, you know, they would give a little show. Each one of the groups would sing at that neighborhood dance.
Okay. So you grew up watching those watching the groups
there?
Well,
I was in the age with them also. But the Magnetics, this one particular Friday, we were all there, and we were just standing, and they were asking for some more groups. So me and Melvin and Tommy and Don and Honda, we just say, well, let's go up there and sing.
Okay.
We just went up there and started singing. And after that, we stayed together because the harmony that we had was pretty close. So we decided we wanted to work and try to make a group out of it.
So how did you guys know each other? Did you live in the same building or near each other?
Well, it was a row houses.
Okay.
We all lived in the same neighborhood. We all went to Jenner School. And at that time, we were at Wells High School and also Washburn Trade, which ended up being Cooley High.
Okay.
So we were always in the same neighborhood, going to the playground, going to Seward Park, where all the groups practice at.
Okay.
That was Seward Park on the north side of Claiborne and Division Street. It still stands there.
Okay, and you went to, you were even in the same class with Jerry Butler?
Yes, me and Jerry Butler started from, I met him in kindergarten.
Okay.
Kindergarten, all the way up through high school, we graduated together.
So the four guys that you just said you sang with at that one show, was that the first time you sang together, or you would
yes.
So you'd never even practiced, and
no,
you just went to the show?
Well, it really wasn't a show. We just got together.
It was a gathering.
It was a community dance on Friday, and you know they always say, well, who wants to sing? We just got up there and sang. Some of the other groups get up there and they sing, you know, and that's the way.
Do you remember what song you sang?
Whipple Wheel.
Okay.
Now, how it goes. Oh, whippoorwill, and that particular thing, and it was just a backyard harmony that we had, and we just put it together and we sang. We didn't win anything, but we just sang anyway.
Do you remember what year that was?
That was in 1957.
Okay, and were you in high school then?
Yeah, we were coming out of high school.
Okay, so you were
senior.
Like,
I was a senior in high school. Melvin was a senior. No, Melvin was a junior. Honda was a junior in high school. Don was a senior, and I also think Tommy was a senior. But Don went to Marshall, I think it was, on the west side.
Okay.
And Tommy was at Wells High School.
So, what are the names of the original five members, the full names?
The full names, Honda Dovell, then you had Tommy Scott, and Melvin Boyd, Andrew Griffin, myself, and Don McLean.
Okay, and so you had never sang previous to singing with those guys, like,
well, you know, standing on the corner harmonizing with this group,
just singing with other guys on the street.
Yeah, that was the thing that we did, you
okay.
know, like instead of being in trouble, we were standing on the corner harmonizing wherever the groups were harmonizing. That's where we were, you know.
Do you remember some of the other groups on the street? Like, do you remember Curtis Mayfield singing or the Billy Butler group singing?
Well, Curtis Mayfield, he was, at that time, was always by himself.
Okay.
He used to sit at Seward Park on the front playing his guitar, and everybody would laugh at him and say, he can't sing. I kept telling him, you watch him, he's going to be something. And later on, him and Jerry Butler, they formed the Roosters while he was still in high school.
Okay.
This was the first name of their group, if I'm not mistaken, the Roosters.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and right before they graduated is when they recorded For Your Precious Love.
Okay, and I think that came around 58, so you were 58. Around the same time you guys were born.
It came out in 57, the last part of 57.
Okay.
We come out of high school in 57.
So you guys were together for a while before you ended up hooking up with Johnny McKinney and ended up recording. So were you guys just sort of, like, what did you guys do? Did you guys do talent shows, or what were you guys doing?
Yes, we went around to different clubs. We did shows in the clubs, and then they had a lot of different talent scout shows that we did around on the west side, BBR on 16th Street, and we went to the Regal. They had a talent show at the Regal. We did a talent show at the Regal, and especially in the neighborhood at Cabrini Green, we were always singing.
But you,
different things.
But you guys never ended up recording anything?
No.
Were you trying to get a record deal?
We were. We went to VJ, following behind Jerry Butler. We went to VJ, and that particular time when we auditioned, you know, how they say, we'll get back to you.
Okay.
And, at that time, then Hunda was drafted.
Okay.
And he went to Vietnam.
So it was the mid-60s some point.
So we kind of went down to four members, and everybody was working. So we wasn't doing as much singing or going around doing shows like we used to do, because everybody started a family.
Okay.
They started their family, and they really started working, you know. And then in 69. That might have been about 69. 68 or 69 is when we...
You hooked up with Johnny.
Got in contact with Johnny through... What's her name?
Gloria Yama.
Yeah, Gloria Yama. She was a manager. She heard us singing. It was just four of us. She said, well, I got somebody that would be a good lead singer, you know.
Okay.
And she introduced us.
Was Hunda previously your lead singer before?
He was one of our leads.
Okay.
Singers, yeah.
And then he got drafted, so you needed a replacement.
Yeah.
So, Johnny, we had the last thing that we had talked about was a record that you had released in 1960. So what were you doing in the early to mid-60s? Were you recording stuff or working? Were you just working and doing...
Basically doing it on the sideline, because as Andrew said, it was working people. I had to work to eat.
Yeah.
So we was just doing that stuff on the sideline, hoping we could, in our spare time, we could go around to make some rounds and maybe get somebody to catch on to what we were doing.
And then you ended up, first of all, you were, how long, when did you move to Chicago from Albion for a while?
Yeah, I moved to Chicago in 1963.
Okay. So where were you staying in Chicago?
In 63, I was living on the south side, I think it was around 67th and Harper or something like that.
Okay. Near here. So and then you remember, and you hooked up with, you met the rest of the group through that manager, Gloria Yarm, you said her name?
Well, she was a friend. It was a friend. We met her through a friend of the McHaggs family.
Okay.
And she knew me, and she put us together.
Okay.
And that's how we got together.
Okay.
And she knew that I was doing some things, because I was working out of Milwaukee, too, at the time.
Okay.
And she kind of put us together. And that's when we formed, started working with the Magnetics.
So did you guys start practicing together, like just singing? Did you start writing material? What was happening?
Well, I was writing the material for us. We were practicing just about every Sunday.
Every weekend. We'd go out to his house.
At my house.
On Sunday,
You were living in Markham at that time?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we would also practice at the field house at Park.
At the Park,
At Cabrini Green, because they would always let us go in there. So.
Okay.
Melvin did the janitorial work in there, so he had the key, so after close up, we would be rehearsing until 1, 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
We would just Just swinging, you know, having a good time.
So you're practicing both on the north side and south suburbs. So you actually ended up cutting a record finally as the Magnetics, and the track was called When I'm With My Baby. So I'm going to play the record, and then we can talk to how you got the deal and what happened. So this is the Magnetics with their first record released as the Magnetics with Johnny McKinney singing lead.
Oh, okay. Andrew Griffin was singing lead.
My bad. I'm sorry.
you sing lead
on the other side of on all.
I just background with the Magnetics.
On Count the Days, you sing lead. But on, okay, Andrew Griffin, who's the other guy in here right now, sings lead on this record. I'm sorry about that.
I wrote the song. He sung the lead on.
So this is Andrew Griffin singing lead with the rest of the Magnetics with When I'm With My Baby. That was just the Magnetics with their very first record called When I'm With My Baby. And Andrew Griffin, who's up in here, sings lead on that record. So who else sings backup besides Johnny McKinney on that 45?
On that 45, you had Tommy Scott, you had Melvin Boyd, and you had Don McKinney.
Okay, so it was five guys singing on the record. Mm-hmm. And we were just talking about how you guys had just gotten together and were practicing both in Markham and in Cabrini Green, usually on the weekends. So how did you end up actually getting a record deal and cutting that record?
Well,
Calvin Carter.
Calvin Carter and them would come by. They knew him.
But that got released on Sable Records?
Right.
Okay, so
that was with what's his name, McCoy.
McCord.
Yeah, McCoy would come by his house. Webb, I think they drove by one time when we were rehearsing in his garage.
So there were two guys with the last names Webb and McCord.
And Vince Sanders of WBEE.
Yeah.
Okay, and Webb and McCord, they were based in Markham at the time.
Yeah.
And they were starting that Sable label.
to put you...
Well, actually, they hadn't started it, but so they heard us, I think.
Okay.
After we started singing and everything, and I think they got ideas of getting together on something like that.
Yeah, okay, so they kind of discovered you in your practicing,
right,
and they wanted to put you guys out.
With Ben Sanders, probably Ben Sanders had a lot to do with it. He was working with WBEE at that time.
And he was a DJ there?
DJ, yeah.
Okay.
I think a lot of those referrals came through him.
Okay, and he was working there, and was... what happened? Did you just sign a contract? Did you go to the studio right away?
No, one thing kind of went to another because we also worked with Burgess Gardner,
okay,
and stuff like that. So we all were kind of connecting there somewhere.
Okay.
By doing songs and they hearing us and they want to do this and let's try this and let's do this and let's do that.
Okay. And do you remember where you recorded the record?
At Chess.
It was at Chess. Mm-hmm. So was it on Michigan?
Right
on
Michigan Avenue.
Okay. And so you cut that record. Did it get any play on the radio?
Yeah.
Yeah, it did.
The When I'm With My Baby side.
That was the one that they pushed more so when the record first came out. That was, I was going down to Dan Ryan on my way to work, and all of a sudden, I'm on the radio.
Okay.
You know, so that one, and then the one that John led.
The Count the Days was the other side, and then the other record was Jackie Baby and I'll Keep Holding On.
That's what he did.
I'll Keep Holding On, yeah.
I'll Keep Holding On came out next.
Okay, mm-hmm. So it probably helped that you had a radio DJ behind it,
too.
Oh,
definitely. It helped mm-hmm. a lot to have those people behind you.
Mm-hmm. So was he one of the main people that played your record? He played on WBEE a lot?
Well, there was several people that referred one to another, you know. They worked together, you know. And they used to have a playlist, what they call a playlist.
Okay.
You know, these DJs mm-hmm. had a playlist, and you got in with them, they would give you a play, something like that once in a while.
So they add you to the playlist?
Just sometime, and they give you a chance to see what it's going to be like. You know?
Yeah. Okay. So the second record, did you cut it in the same session, the I'll Keep Holding On? Or did you do all four songs at the same time?
Yeah, all four songs at the same time.
And do you remember if you did any more material, or you just cut four songs, pretty much?
Well, there's other materials we did, but we didn't get actually a label with them.
Okay, but in that session, did you only do four songs?
Right.
That particular time.
And do you remember anything about the orchestra? That, like you said, Burgess Gardner was involved. You don't know if he...
Not in that one.
Okay.
Not in that session. These were studio musicians.
At the Chess studio, probably?
It was a jazz.
Richard Evans.
Oh, so Richard Evans.
Richard Evans arranged.
He did the whole arrangement.
He did the whole arrangement.
Songs. Okay.
And then those were studio musicians, musicians that he knew.
Okay.
That when he had sessions that he had to do, he would use some of these musicians.
And you, John, wrote all the four songs, is that right?
All of them, but that one that Don led.
Mm-hmm. Count the Days.
Count the Days. I didn't write Count the Days.
The group wrote that.
Okay, so who sings lead on Count the Days?
Don McLean.
And then on I'll Keep Holding On and Jackie Baby, Johnny McKinney sings lead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me play I'll Keep Holding On, the second record, and then we could talk a little bit more. So this is The Magnetics with I'll Keep Holding On.
Yes, in my heart.
group together.
There were four young ladies. They had a group. And they would always rehearse with us, but they never do anything.
I'm sorry, what were you saying?
The girls that were on the background there?
Okay, so on that record, in addition to the Magnetics, there's girls singing?
They were doing background, yes.
And you said there was actually a group?
They were a group. It was three girls.
Do you remember what group they were?
I don't know. I don't even think they got there. They were just doing like we used to do as a singing.
Were they from Markham or were they?
They're from Chicago area. That's all.
Okay. So
Southside.
So that was just the Magnetics with their second record, I'll Keep Holding On. And that record had Johnny McKinney singing lead on it, and it had some extra female vocals added to it, too. And we were also just talking about how before playing the record that Richard Evans did the arrangements on it, and it ended up being very jazzy sounding.
Right.
And you guys were talking about how it kind of made it sound ahead of its time and didn't sort of hurt its airplay possibly because of the sound. So, but it did get some play on the radio, right?
Yeah.
And were you guys, now that you had records out and that got played on the radio, did you guys start doing shows, like bigger shows than you did before?
Not really. We didn't do anything really big at the time.
Okay. What was the biggest show that you did? Was that like the Regal, probably?
Well, no, I don't think we did nothing there. I think the biggest thing we did was with Ruby Andrews at that time.
Ruby Andrews, yeah, that was...
That was at some type of a fair that she was singing at, and we were doing some things there.
Okay.
Yeah, we were the opening act for her.
Okay.
At that time, and it was on Stony Island, no. Yeah, but
was it the High Chaparral?
No, it was. Okay. It was some auditorium where she was appearing.
Okay. And it was right after Casanova came out. You're telling me?
Yes, right around that time.
Yeah, our record and Casanova came out about the same time.
Okay.
So that's why we were doing the.
It was a promotion scheme too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so the Magnetics ended up actually cutting one more 45, Oh Love and Wasting Time. And that came out on the JV label. So what's the story with that? How did you end up moving to this record label, and who ran it?
Well, again, that was a referral, again, from one company to another, from that one producer to another.
Okay.
And that was on a JV, which was the old VJ label.
Okay.
It was Calvin Carter.
Okay, so JV was Calvin Carter's label.
So that was the label that that they changed around from VJ to JV.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so pretty much like he lost control of the label DJ, and he started his own little kind of
they were trying to make a comeback.
Okay.
Really, but because they were bankrupt, I guess, or
okay,
you know, and they had a lot of people were after him, I guess.
Yeah, I know that Capitol Records was after them with the Beatles,
yeah.
The Beatles
right.
Stuff.
Right, a lot of stuff like that was going on, which. We knew about it, but we said.
So he was trying to start up a new label. So you ended up recording for Calvin Carter?
Well, he was the producer.
Okay, so he produced the record.
He produced that one for us. Mm-hmm.
On the label of JV. Label.
Okay, and I think he did a lot of stuff like he reversed the letters. There's another record he put out where he put an I in the middle of it, so he wrote V-I-J.
Oh,
yeah.
So
infringing upon copyright.
I think that was one of the things to keep the internal revenue and the bankrupt support from you know, kind of
kicking off, me, see.
Mm-hmm. So Calvin Carter put out that record, and that record was Oh Love and Wasting Time. Do you remember where you recorded that?
Universal Studios
over on in
Old Town. Okay. Mm-hmm. And both sides of the record are nice. What was the intended A side, Wasting Time or Oh Love?
Oh Love, because Wasting Time was a remake. I remade that on Sippin' Wine.
Yeah, you redid the song later.
Yeah, Wasting Time. Switched over to after we had messed with it, went over to Sippin' Wine.
Yeah, you redid the song.
Sippin' Wine.
So that's the side I like. It's just a nice song about hanging out and drinking.
That's
the majority of the words is Sippin' Wine, Wasting Time.
Yeah,
that's basically the title of the song, and We were born.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll play the record, and we can talk some more. This is the Magnetics with the B-side of their last record. This track is called Wasting Time. Okay, that was just
microphone right on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that was the Magnetics with their last record, Sippin' Wine, and Andrew was just saying that you had the alcohol pouring effect. You were pouring water into a glass in front of the microphone.
Get the effects, sound effects.
Okay.
It's a wine of pouring effect.
Wine, yeah. Sippin' wine and wasting time.
So. I had a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah.
And did Old Love get play on the radio?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was the next one.
I think that was your biggest record that you guys did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because Calvin Carter probably had better promotional ability than, because he had more connections than the small Sable label.
Yeah, we got more play with the last two records than we did with the other four.
Yeah.
And but then again, we didn't do personal appearances. As far as the records is concerned, because after that, I think everything began to fold. His situation began to break.
You're saying the label began to fold. So what was happening at the time? Because I know that, Johnny, you ended up in the early 70s remaking that record in Milwaukee on Chess Records.
Yeah, 7-1.
So... did the Magnetics stay together for a while? What happened after that record came out?
Oh, well, we didn't do any singing after that, because, like I said, he had went to Milwaukee, and me and Melvin drove up to Milwaukee to get with him and see what was going on as far as Milwaukee is concerned.
Okay.
And nothing really materialized, because they were working with him, and... they didn't seem to want the rest of the group at that particular time.
Well, they were working with me, but then I was directed to New York.
Okay.
To do, and that's when we remade Sippin' Wine.
Okay.
Again, we remade.
You did a third
Wasting
time.
Time to Sippin' Wine.
Oh, so when you remade.
The company that was interested wanted us to change changed the title.
That came out on Chess Records, though, eventually.
Yes. That
was around 1970 it came out,
yes.
I think. So, first of all, how did you end up... So you were living in Chicago, and then you ended up... Were you living in Milwaukee? Were you just working there and driving? What was happening?
Well, I worked there for a while. I worked for Midwest Success Training Association there for a while. That's what I was doing.
What was that? What were you doing?
It was like a company that took people in for GED study, to study for the GED and stuff like that.
So were you were working, or were you driving back and forth from Chicago every day?
Yes, not every day. That's why I had an apartment up there.
Okay.
And I'd come to Chicago on the weekend.
Okay, so around the late 60s, you started working for them, that company?
Yes.
So you were traveling back and forth.
Went to Milwaukee from...
And you got involved with music in Milwaukee, is that right? Because,
right.
So, 'cause I know you were on Chess Records, and then there was a bunch of other artists from Milwaukee on Chess at the time, like Harvey Scales was on.
Yeah, Harvey Scales.
So did you, what was the scene like there? Did you know Harvey?
I didn't know him personally, no.
Okay. Was there like a music scene there, or was just a people struggling?
Milwaukee really wasn't promoting a lot of the artists there. I mean, that one song, Girls of the City.
The Esquires.
Esquires were pretty big.
And they were done in Chicago, those records.
Yeah, but Milwaukee wasn't too open for a lot of that type of music.
Okay. So pretty much you were... Just were you doing shows with like local bands and stuff?
Mostly stuff I was working out of studio.
Okay.
Working in the studio, doing a bunch of recordings, songs I had wrote, and trying to find something decent enough to say, let's make a tape on, or make a copy of a record of it.
And how did you end up getting a record deal with Chess Records? Do you remember how that happened?
Yeah, went to New York.
Oh, so you went to New York and got...
Went to New York and hitting the streets and hitting the companies.
But so even though Chess was based in Chicago, you got...
Based, but it was GRT Chess then.
Oh, okay. So you got the deal in New York.
Yeah, but we got the deal in New York.
Okay.
But it was called GRT Chess.
Yeah, because GRT had bought the label.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so... and then you ended up releasing Sippin' Wine and a dance record called Yoke Stroke With Me Baby.
Yeah.
And Harvey Scales had a Yoke record also, actually.
Yeah,
I
think I remember something like that. Afterwards.
So at the time... And you cut that, and there were girls singing back up on there.
Yeah.
Did you actually record it in New York?
That one I recorded. No, I recorded that in. I recorded part of it in Milwaukee.
Okay.
We did, and then we finished it up in New York.
And do you remember who the girls were singing on it?
They were just some of the musician friends that was on the record with me.
Okay.
Some of their girlfriends.
Okay.
You know, just.
And
New York.
So, and Andrew had tried to. You said you guys had tried to come up to Milwaukee to, like, be involved with the record, but Chess wasn't interested? Is that the story?
Well, Johnny had called us and was talking to me, basically, about what he was doing in Milwaukee, and he told me to bring the group up, but only me and the bass singer went up, and to see exactly what he was getting involved in, and if they wanted to bring the rest of the group and have the rest of the group involved in what he was doing.
Okay.
Because he was doing a lot of stuff in the studio.
Okay.
And we wanted to find out before we started going back and forth to Milwaukee. You know, we wanted to find out what was going on. And before anything really materialized, I think that's when he...
They had got me directed to New York.
Yeah.
Okay.
New York. They had set up something for me to come to New York.
So you ended up cutting that record, and did that get play in Milwaukee?
Yeah.
Okay.
It got played here too.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And there was actually, you had shown me like a newspaper article with it where you're singing in a club, and it said, I read the article, it said there was like a white group called the Ox.
Ox. So they were white boys that from, they were going to the university.
Okay.
Good band.
So were they like your backing band in Milwaukee? You did shows with them?
Musicians, they were on the recording.
Okay.
Called the Ox.
So the Ox plays on that record.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and Then you ended up cutting a second record in Milwaukee called Mama Take Care of Your Baby.
Yeah.
And that was actually cut on a local Milwaukee record, Milwaukee's label Brewtown yeah. Records, which they put out a bunch of artists. You were one of the earlier artists on
yes,
the label.
Yes, awesome.
And one thing that's interesting is it says on the record label New World Production. And I'm yeah. looking, when I was looking through your stuff, you had a whole bunch of stuff like you were trying to start up New World
yeah,
Productions.
Yeah, I was the president of New World Productions. It was a production company.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did that end up being one of the only things that you ended up producing on New World?
At that time, yes.
Because I don't know if you know this, but later in Milwaukee, there ended up being a New World record label, I think run by someone named Marvell Love. You don't remember that name?
The name doesn't remember.
Okay. So that record that you cut on Brewtown, how did you end up getting... You didn't run Brewtown, right? Someone
no.
else ran it?
No.
How did you end up getting a recording deal with Brewtown Records?
Actually, it was through a ranger who was, I can't think of his name now, that knew me, and he suggested that. So he was the one that recommended it, and that's, he set it up for
me. Was it Ron Lipe? Is that the guy's name? Because that name was on the record. It was like Ron... Okay.
I know the guy's name. I can't think of it right now, but...
Okay. Well, so you ended up getting this local record on Brewtown Records,
yes.
and this got some play, too, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, and why did... Another question is, why did you end up cutting both records as Johnny Lemack?
It was a catchy name.
Okay. is your middle name Lee?
See, my real name is John Lee McKinney.
Okay.
And so we just saw it shorted up to Johnny Lemack.
Okay, so let me play part one of the Mama Take Care of Your Baby, and then we'll talk a little more.
Okay.
So this is Johnny Lemack, who is Johnny McKinney, with Mama Take Care of Your Baby. Okay, that was just Johnny Lemack, who is Johnny Lee McKinney, who is up in here right now. And that was one of the last records that you released on, and it came out on Milwaukee's Brewtown record label sometime in the early 70s, maybe 71, 72, something like that.
Yes, sir.
And that record, it did get some local play and Milwaukee play also. So what happened with the Magnetics? Did you guys stay together for any period of time after that?
Well, as far as doing, you know, shows or anything like that.
They kind of drifted. Everybody kind of drifted apart.
Everybody went to...
Kind of went their separate ways.
Started a family.
Families and things like that.
Okay. And, but Johnny, you stayed... So Andrew, did you ever do any other music stuff since then?
No, I did nothing because I started a big family.
Okay.
I started working for CTA, and I stayed with them for 32 years. But, you know, it was always in my heart that I really wanted to sing because I grew up around a lot of,
famous musicians, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, like all the big people that came up out of Chicago came from your housing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, like I say, Jerry Butler, Curtis Mayfield, Major Land, Ramsey Lewis. He was even older, you know, but he went to Wells High School, went to Jesuit School. So we all came from the same neck of the woods. You know, the high rises on the north side came up in 61. But before then, it was just the row houses, which were mainly done for Montgomery Ward's workers. But they didn't want to live there, so they started letting other families move into those row houses.
So was it called Cabrini Green? Was it called Cabrini Green before?
Francis Cabrini Green. That's what it was called.
But before they put the high rises there, was it still called Cabrini Green?
It was called Francis Cabrini.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So that it actually wasn't even the name of the housing, like the name was there before.
Once the high rises came up, then they started calling it Cabrini Green.
Okay.
They took the Francis Cabrini because she was the nun that was named after the a hospital over there on Racine and Polk Street or somewhere right in that area. It was a hospital.
Okay.
And that was the Francis Cabrini Hospital.
Okay.
So the project from Montgomery Ward named the row houses after this particular nun.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then they built the high rises, it kept the same name. It became Cabrini Green.
Cabrini Green, and they had the white projects and the brown projects, which was one's on the north side of Division Street, the other one's on the south side of Division Street. So it was just the red buildings and the brown buildings, you know.
Okay. That's interesting. I just learned about Chicago history. So you ended up starting a family, but Johnny stayed involved with music, is that right?
Yeah, so I started my own business, McKinney Music Incorporated.
So did you move back to Chicago when you did that?
I was here in Chicago all the time.
Okay, so you stopped working in Milwaukee, though? You stopped?
Yeah. I
got rid of your apartment there?
Yeah, and moved back to Chicago completely.
Okay, so when you were working, so what was McKinney Music?
That's a music store.
Okay, so you actually...
So musical instruments, teach and...
So you're still, and you still have your store today, right?
Right.
It's in Beverly?
It's in, it's still called Chicago. It's down from Evergreen Plaza.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's if people could go and take piano lessons from you.
Piano lessons and
guitar lessons.
Guitar lessons. Oh, we teach all lessons. So. Mm-hmm.
So people could actually go and learn from Johnny McKinney.
A lot of people don't know that I did that because I never really... promoted myself in that manner. I just never did. A lot of people probably that may be hearing this now don't even know that I'd sung.
Okay.
Because I never did go out and really boast about it.
And
my own daughter was one time listening to my some records of mine, and she didn't know what it was. And she said, "Who is that?" I said, "That's me. That's me, Daddy." She says, "What?" She didn't know I was a singer.
That's funny. Yeah. And then actually probably about 5-6 years ago, maybe a company in the UK released some of your older material that was never released that you had on tape.
A lot of it.
And so one of the songs they released was The Look on Your Face.
Mm-hmm.
So it came out actually on a label out of England called Grapevine. And
I wasn't aware of that either.
Okay. They released it on a 45.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know that. I'll show it to you.
Yeah. It's on that piece of paper I showed you.
Yeah, that was the...
Yeah.
So, but it's interesting that After 40 years, people in the United Kingdom and collectors around the world are still interested in your music. So,
yeah. Well, they came from England to see me.
Okay.
Personally, I guess they had got word that I was doing songs there, and they had got a hold of some copies, and they came down to see me to talk about it, to negotiate some things with it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I got to say thanks so much for coming down and telling your story.
Well, we
it was an interesting interview.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Very nice. I'm glad.
I think you told me some things I didn't know. You found out some things I didn't know.
Yeah.
And any like last words for the listening audience?
Well, not much to say. I just appreciate you doing research and all this. And as I said, you brought up some things I just had totally forgot about.
Okay, well, thanks again. So this last record I'm going to play is Johnny Lee Mack's remake of Sippin' Wine.
Okay.